thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
There we go.
Here's John Williams.
109. Let's see if we can't crack out a couple of big thoughts, a couple of laughs, a couple of bright side mentions. Later in the show, we'll ask you to give us some good news in your world. On Friday, we call it the bright side. So where are you going to be around 2:40 this afternoon? We'll do the bright side about an hour and a half from now. Give us some good news. We'll all smile. Yeah, that's the bright side. It's the way to end your week and start your weekend. And after a day like this, we could use it. Bingo, my dog decided it would be real fun if we got up about, 1 o'clock this morning and went for a pee. So I got up and walked him out, and I thought, oh, wow, this is what it feels like when you take the dog out in the middle of the night and it's cold. And it wasn't that cold yet. But it was the first time I went, oh, yeah, this is really going to be a bad habit if we get into this, Bingo. And then I stepped outside this morning. Maybe you did the same, too. And I thought, oh, yeah. And by the way, there will be days soon where we will wish for weather, of course, like this. But here it comes. So now you do have your hat, and you did find your mittens, and you do wear a warmer coat today. Still, the leaves aren't all that pretty. I mentioned this yesterday because I think big thoughts every single day so you don't have to. The Wall Street Journal, lagging behind my curve, wrote a story today, Instagram emergency, this year's fall foliage is not suitable for posting. Steve Bertrand wondered if maybe it had something to do with the weather. That's what a journalism degree gets you, folks. It says here, while the shortening of days prompts some color changes, such as trees going from green to yellow or orange, cooler temperatures are necessary to produce vibrant reds and purples. And since it feels like the whole summer-fall seasons have shifted a month to the right anyway, it was just so doggone pleasant and not real hot, warm in August and September. In the first of October, it was not real cool yet. Cold. It wasn't real hot either. It was just kind of in that pleasant little valley Sunday that we were all enjoying. But you need, it says here, crisper temperatures than we've had. Maybe they'll start to turn soon. According to the Wall Street Journal, this is their report of what happened, I believe, in the eastern part of the United States. Since the middle of September, the journal reported, it has been 15 degrees warmer than normal in the eastern part of the United States, leading to a duller-toned fall. I'd say we've been going through that ourselves. Factors including warmer weather and reports of a Norway maple fungus have led to poor foliage in New York. And I don't know that we've got that, but Steve, we need cooler, crisper weather for these leaves to pop.
Really?
Well, that's a big news alert. Listen, I was going to wish happy birthday to Lee Greenwood today. LF, can we go ahead and play a little Lee Greenwood singing I'm Proud to Be an American? Hit it.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
This is a song that's had an interesting arc. It came out and everybody kind of liked it. But then it became a sort of song that champions America. It was more than just a song. It was a sort of symbol of pride in this country.
There ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Lee Greenwood's birthday is today, and the President of the United States decided to wish him a happy birthday. So he tweeted, happy birthday to the great at Lee Greenwood. You and your beautiful song have made such a difference. Make America great again. Capital letters, exclamation point at the end there. Happy birthday to the great Lee Greenwood. Twitter's a funny thing, because if you don't know someone's Twitter handle, it's sometimes not as easy to tell which John Williams you're tweeting to. John Williams will come up in a lot of different ways. Lee Greenwood is not an unusual name either. And unfortunately, the president tweeted that to the wrong Lee Greenwood. An East Coast attorney got it, who in fact protested against the president's policies. He said, that's weird. It's not even my birthday. But I've done that before. I've sent email to wrong people. I've sent texts and tweets to wrong people. I've done the reply all when I meant reply one. So I think we can all relate a little bit to the embarrassment, if that's possible, that the president went through when he tweeted to the whole globe a message to the wrong person. In fact, speaking of the president for just a minute here, Elif, let's play cut eight. The president gave his speech yesterday about the opioid crisis that we are suffering in America. And one of the lines that was often played on the radio and TV and circulated on the internet was the president saying this.
There is nothing desirable about drugs. They're bad.
And I think when that is your, when that's your soundbite, and it's a soundbite, that's his summary. There's nothing good about drugs. They're bad. We've got to be, you don't have room for a 10-minute speech, so you're looking for something that pops, and that's a line. Play it again, Elif. Here's the president's attitude about drugs.
There is nothing desirable about drugs. They're bad.
The president sort of had an attitude like the Reagans did, where they just said, just say no. You know, here, oh, I know. Let's just not take drugs. They're bad. And that'll solve the problem, or maybe that'll help. And that seems to be at least a little myopic, doesn't it? But I listened to the president's whole speech today. I'm going to play a little of it for you here. And it wasn't a bad speech. The president does not have to have read it, or pardon me, written it. He read it, but it was not a bad speech. The speech essentially said, and while it did not attain the highest level of federal attention, we're not going to create new funds to fight the opioid epidemic. We're at least going to divert all funds available and all resources available to fight the opioid epidemic in this country. And I thought that the speech at least outlined pretty well the size of the problem. This is cut one, Elif. This is the president describing what we're up against.
Last year, we lost at least 64,000 Americans to overdoses. That's 175 lost American lives per day. That's 7 lost lives per hour in our country. Drug overdoses are now the leading cause of unintentional death in the United States by far. More people are dying from drug overdoses today than from gun homicides and motor vehicles combined.
Think about that. So here's just another soundbite from the president. This is Trump 2, Elif, and this is him further sort of describing the scope of the problem.
Last year, almost 1 million Americans used heroin, and more than 11 million abused prescription opioids.
Some of you are shocked maybe to hear that 1 million of us have used heroin. There aren't but 300 million of us. 1 in 300 people are using heroin. I don't know, does that sound like a lot or not as much to you? That number stuns me. Both of those do. God, I always thought that heroin would be just the worst possible thing. That's a gun to your head. It is a gun to your head. And yet 1 million people reportedly have or are using heroin. So that's what we're up against. The president described it also, cut three, Elif, in these terms.
As part of this emergency response, we will announce a new policy to overcome a restrictive 1970s-era rule that prevents states from providing care at certain treatment facilities with more than 16 beds for those suffering from drug addiction. A number of states have reached out to us asking for relief, and you should expect to see approvals that will unlock treatment for people in need, and those approvals will come very, very fast, not like in the past, very, very quickly.
Donald Trump cannot resist the opportunity to criticize his predecessors. I don't know who they were that weren't doing it quick enough, but by golly, he's going to do it better. Hey, I hope he does. Don't you? And this is interesting. He said that he's going to go to China and he's going to talk to Xi about a number of things there, and that this will be on his agenda. And when President Xi hears President Trump say that they have to stop exporting these terribly addictive drugs to the United States, and they are, that he will listen.
And in 2 weeks, I will be in China with President Xi, and I will mention this as a top priority. And he will do something about it.
I hope so. I didn't know it was that simple. I'm not being super critical of the president's speech. I thought it was pretty well written. It's just funny when he inserts himself, you can always feel the Trump stamp on something. And sometimes that serves him and sometimes it doesn't. And I suppose your attitude about that depends on how you view this president. What is also getting attention, besides just his little one-off about drugs are bad and don't do drugs, is his personal attachment to this story when he talked about what his late brother Fred went through.
I learned myself. I had a brother, Fred. Great guy. Best looking guy. Best personality. Much better than mine. But he had a problem. He had a problem with alcohol. And he would tell me, don't drink. Don't drink. He was substantially older, and I listened to him, and I respected. But he would constantly tell me, don't drink. He'd also add, don't smoke. But he would say it over and over and over again. And to this day, I've never had a drink. And I have no longing for it. I have no interest in it. To this day, I've never had a cigarette. Don't worry. Those are only two of my good things. I don't want to tell you about the bad things. There's plenty of bad things, too. But he really helped me. I had somebody that guided me. He was a strong guy, but it was a tough, tough thing that he was going through. But I learned because of Fred. I learned. And that's what I think is so important. This was an idea that I had, where if we can teach young people not to take drugs, just not to take them, when I see friends of mine that are having difficulty with not having that drink at dinner, where it's literally almost impossible for them to stop, I say to myself, I can't even understand it. Why would that be difficult? The fact is, if we can teach young people and people generally not to start, it's really, really easy not to take them. And I think that's going to end up being our most important thing. Really tough, really big, really great advertising. So we get to people before they start, so they don't have to go through the problems of what people are going through.
So you believe the president's heart is in the right place, but that part of the speech sounded so naive to me. It, in fact, does sound like somebody who's never smoked or had so much as an ounce of alcohol. He's closer to it maybe than a lot of us are. He lost a brother to alcohol. But that attitude, I thought, was so naive it was almost not helpful. But I wonder what your reaction to that part of this speech was. My number is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Right there, what did you just think or say to yourself? Hey, thank you, somebody needed to say that, or something else. You know more about Ireland than I do. Why do they call it the IBAM?
The festival?
The IBAM, the ninth annual IBAM, right. Exclamation point.
I don't know. Maybe it's Ireland just BAM. I don't know. No, I actually spent the whole weekend there for IBAM last year, I think.
So if it was
really a nice festival.
Korea BAM, it would be K-BAM. K-BAM. If it was Argentina, it would be A-BAM.
Well, we don't want to say A-BAM.
If it was Alabama, it would be Bam Bam.
Right.
That's a Flintstones joke.
I'm not sure the answer, but you should go.
IBAM.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
It does sound like that.
Now that you're a city boy, it's just a little hoof for you.
You know, I am the worst kind of person in the city.
What do you mean?
Well, I hate this about me, but having recently moved to the city, you know, I'm kind of a little younger, more urban, and I'm always just subtly dragging that around. Well, I was on the L. Well, I was in this neighborhood at a fest.
I think all of that is great. I don't think you should wear that shirt that says, stop picking on us millennials. I think that's too far.
Sometimes even I want to slap me, so I'll try and, you know.
No, I meant that as a good thing.
I did. Let's just finish where the president was speaking. Let's see. We were on cut 7, cut 8. Is cut 6 next? Oh, yeah, this is interesting. We're playing back part of the president's speech yesterday on the opioid crisis. This is something he said will help.
An astonishing 90% of the heroin in America comes from south of the border, where we will be building a wall, which will greatly help in this problem.
Applause there, maybe not as robust as he thought it was going to be, but the wall will help. Another reason to get the wall. I'll just be honest with you. When he said, I had this idea, What we need to do is tell kids that drugs are bad and they should never take them. And so what we should do is have some really tough advertising, and maybe that will keep kids from doing drugs. And I almost, in fact, I did. I laughed out loud when I heard that, that it were that simple. He spent 8-9 minutes telling us just how entrenched this problem is, or we are with this problem. And then the idea is, so let's come up with some really good commercials. Maybe that helped us stop smoking as much as we do. Maybe it'll work. But as you and I know people who are addicted to drugs and alcohol, the idea that we should just tell them, boy, that's really bad, and let's put that in commercials, strikes me as really distanced from the root of the problem. Steve, you go first. You're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi, Steve. You're on the air. Breaker, breaker. Steve, we'll come back to you and go to Gene. Gene, this is John. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi. I just wish sometimes there was a way to expose kids to see what the downside of those things are like, especially if they've been raised in homes probably like yours and mine. I grew up in a supper club in Wisconsin, and my father was one of those functioning alcoholics who found a way he could drink on the job. And I saw more people, you know, it just was such a lesson. Interestingly enough, there are statistics that show that if there's a family of, say, four kids, there were in ours, that many times they'll follow the roles they know, you know, but other times they stand back and say, oh, my God, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be that. It is so hard, and I know the high schools try to have educational programs on drugs. And what scares the dickens out of me is when I went to the UW, I rarely drank anything. I just am not ever interested in it, didn't have the time. But the binge drinking and things that go on, I don't know how they managed to keep it a secret. The American Cancer Society recently came out and connected alcohol to breast cancer. Now, of course, there's a lot of other factors, the BRAC, whatever genetic thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've known that since the 1970s. I worked on a book with Birch Bayh when he was senator of Indiana, from Indiana, and Marvella died because of the cocktail circuit.
Wow. Gene, I got to go.
Sure.
Appreciate your phone call. I'm looking at my clock. It's 1:29. Ellip's flashing the light, says, shut up, John. Last note about this. Here's a couple of texts. John, it sounds like just say no in the Reagan era. I don't think that worked then. John, I actually thought that maybe he did a little good with this speech. I did not find it ineffective. That's just my opinion from the 630 area code. 815 says, John, I can't stand that he's president, but although it is naive, he spoke from the heart. It felt genuine, and I've never said that about him before. From 815, that speech was way beyond naive. He doesn't think people have been trying to do just that for years. John, sincere or naive, at least it was the only down-to-earth speech I've heard him give where I thought of him as a normal person. Yeah, it sort of had a feel of that, didn't it? It's 1:30. This is WGN. Lots of calls, lots of texts about the president's speech on the opioid epidemic, pages of them here. We played back some of the president's speech a moment ago, and when he gave the personal narrative about how his brother was addicted to alcohol and he never was, I said that part of the speech, however sincere, was naive. And a lot of texts came in about that. John, the fact that Donald Trump does not understand the person who can't help but take up the drink tells me he knows nothing about addiction. There was one that I was actually looking for that was along those lines. Oh, shoot, where is it now? Maybe Trump advertising. It was from a person who said, John, I have a son who was in the D.A.R.E. program at school when he was in grade school. Gratefully, he survived a heroin overdose last Sunday. No amount of commercials or advertising will help. I'm not saying we shouldn't put the message out there. We've got to pump it into the kids' heads early. But that's the light bulb that the president said, I had this idea. Let's tell the kids when they're young with really good advertising that drugs are bad, that he would offer that up as a great idea, that might really help. I'm not against advertising and telling kids drugs are bad, but if he thinks that's new or is going to be a game change, then he is naive. It's 1:40 on WGN. Okay, so half a century later, Papers may or may not shed light on the JFK assassination. Everybody's been wondering, what's in those papers? How many of them are there? And why did it take us so long to actually get the last of these documents? What harm could come if we found out what was in there? On a phone line is Robert Blakey from Notre Dame's Law School. Blakey has extensively investigated the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. He served as the chief counsel and staff director to the U.S. House Select Committee on Assassinations from 1977 to 79. In fact, our guest helped to draft the President John F. Kennedy Assassination Records Collection Act of 1992. Mr. Blakey, this is John Williams. You're on WGN. Hi.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. What was that Records Collection Act of 1992? I've heard a little bit about that. What did that do?
Okay, the House Select Committee on Assassinations that I was the chief counsel to released as many documents as we could that we had looked at. But there was a substantial number that had not been released. And so we passed a statute in Congress that required everything in the government, from us, the Senate committee, CIA, et cetera, to release everything within 50 years, which is what this deadline is.
15 years, yeah.
The remarkable thing is that they've not released it. Trump made a statement that he's going to give the agencies 6 months to convince him not to redact the documents. The documents that are being put out now are largely redacted, excluding certain parts that the agencies don't want to get out. They were supposed to have cleared that up before today, and Trump didn't do it.
Why not?
So,
any idea why not?
No, I really can't speculate for what's in his head, if there's anything there at all. He should have done it and finished it as of today.
Have you seen the documents? Robert, have you seen those documents?
I have seen about 99% of them in an unredacted form. When I was the chief counsel of the committee, I could look at anything, and I did. And whether we used it in the committee's hearings, et cetera, was up to a negotiation between us and the committees. Yes, I've seen most of them.
Well, is there something in there that if we were to see it, we would say, oh, my God, national security is compromised, or somebody committed a crime, or would we see evidence of some sort of conspiracy between Oswald and others?
Well, let's just no, they should be released, unredacted. 50 years is a long time. That means if somebody was 1 year old then,
yeah, I got it.
They're 20 years then, they're 70.
I can do the math, yeah.
30s. Okay, I mean, most of the people who are connected with the Kennedy assassination are dead and buried.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, but it's been described as a matter of national security, or that there are some secrets that are too sensitive to be released. And I can't even imagine what that would be. You've seen 99% of these documents unredacted, so how bad is it?
This is the problem, is one of the things that the agency, the CIA, would not let us do in our hearings was indicating that the CIA had a station in Mexico City. That fact is classified. Of course, you can read it in the newspapers all the time. We were reading it in the Washington Post at that time. But the agencies, no, you can't. You're part of the government. You can't say that the agency has a station. There is the only word to describe it is a hysterical concern about sensitive sources and methods. And I agree with that. If something is overheard, it doesn't make any difference whether it was overheard by a wiretap or a bug or by an informant. The important thing is what is overheard, not how it was overheard.
Yeah, no kidding.
And well, so you can let out what was overheard, and the agency is just there is the word for it is hysterical.
Well, you said to me off the air today that you think this is a bait and switch where the president said we're going to release the documents, or he certainly wants to.
Yeah, no, but the statute required him to release it today. And all the press has covered of all this stuff that's been released. No, this was already released, but it's in a redacted form. And he's going to make the people in the next 6 months explain why it shouldn't be redacted.
Okay.
But that's what he's supposed to have done 6 months ago.
Right. So this big deadline this week is sort of come and gone. We'll have to revisit this in 6 months, in other words.
Yes.
Let me ask you this. Based on your research and reading of all of this, did Lee Harvey Oswald act alone?
No.
No.
If you look at the evidence in the plaza from the witnesses, eyewitnesses and ear witnesses, they heard gunshots from two directions. They saw and smelled smoke on the grassy knoll. So you got eyes, ears, and nose witnesses, and they include Secret Service agents and police officers, incredible witnesses. But the Warren Commission said those witnesses were not credible. Well, when we talked to them, I'm talking to me personally, I found them very credible. They didn't find them credible because if they had found them credible with two shooters in the plaza, they would have to have said conspiracy.
And if there was a conspiracy, who did Oswald conspire with?
That's the interesting question.
that's what I do here. So, I mean, was it the communists? Was it was it the gangsters? Was it
no? You can your attitude is almost this is the murder on the Orient Express. Everybody did it. There is substantial evidence to believe the Soviets did it, but on balance. They didn't. That the Cubans did it, but on balance, they didn't. That the anti-Castro Cubans did it, but on balance, they didn't. The one area where you can't sort of preclude involvement is by organized crime in New Orleans and in Dallas.
Okay. So maybe the mafia was involved with Oswald on this, huh?
Yeah. Not the national group. But the low-level group. And the Rosetta Stone is who is Jack Ruby. Jack Ruby kills Oswald. One thing we know for sure is Jack Ruby killed Oswald, because we saw it on TV. If Jack Ruby, what are his connections? His connections are mob-related.
I thought that he was just some kook who... Yeah, everybody's a kook in this story, but another just nut job who... fantastically was able to get close to Oswald. I mean, when you watch that video now, you think, how in the world, given the sort of protocols and procedures we have now with criminals and somebody who shot the president, you couldn't walk through a scrum of journalists and civilians like that. It's amazing he was that close.
It was outrageous the way the press just went in everywhere. So Jack Ruby tried to get to Oswald, I think. At least four occasions. Huh. And the fact that he got to him on that day and place is largely coincidental. But he got his assignment to go kill Oswald the night of the assassination.
He got his assignment. And here again, maybe we don't know the answer to who specifically, but you suggest that it was the mob told Ruby to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they were afraid if Oswald was alive, he would eventually find out that he was duped. Hmm. He was taking the position that he was a patsy, that he wasn't involved, and he was asking to talk to a man named Jan Apt, who was a leading communist lawyer. Well, when Jan Apt didn't show up, Oswald would suddenly realize that maybe he was out there alone, and he might have talked. And I think that's the reason Jack Ruby killed him. So he didn't talk.
Yeah. Well, all right, so this is October, November, December, January, February, March, April. Maybe we'll visit again. The president gave him 6 months. If nothing else, I think a lot of us are past this story, but we would like to just, you know, for its own sake, see sunlight fall on all of these documents and let people make up their own minds.
Yes.
Well, that's the reason I'll ask you back. Robert Blakey from Notre Dame University, the law school there, and President John F. Kennedy Assassination Records Collection Act of 1992 author. We're out of time. Thank you for joining us here on WGN. Hey, John, the government doesn't like you to know Ted Kennedy killed his brother with someone else in a sewer under the bridge. It's in the video. This is the kind of crowdsourcing that makes solving problems so much easier. You just put it on the radio, and there's the answer. Ted Kennedy did it. He was in a sewer under the bridge, and you can see it in the video, which takes Ted Cruz's dad off the hook, and that's good news. John, it's too bad nobody knew about this deadline to unredact these documents until Trump was elected. Well, I don't know if the president acted correctly or incorrectly. I don't think this is a Donald Trump story. I mean, you and I don't know what's in there. You know, if it was up to any of us, we'd say, oh, hell, let me just see the documents. Stop fussing around. About President Trump's speech yesterday on the opioid epidemic, lots of texts still coming in. We played back part of what he said, particularly the part where he talked about his personal connection to the story. His brother Fred died from alcoholism, and he said, I never understood the addiction. I think we should just tell young people not to do it. He said, don't drink, don't smoke. He says, I've never understood the attraction. He said, maybe we should have an advertising campaign that will show how difficult your life will be if you take drugs or alcohol. The texts include these. This is your brain. This is your brain on drugs. Advertising. Been there, done that, doesn't work, says Sue. From the 847 area code, Obama did nothing to reduce the problem in 8 years. Give Trump a chance. From 630, 4 out of 5 opiate addicts start from legal pain prescriptions. I'm one of them. I got blown up in Afghanistan. I took prescriptions as prescribed. I never was out early, never had to buy any of them on the street, never had to go to heroin. Part of resolving the issue is getting the prescriptions under control. This one from the 630 area code says, maybe Trump should make an advertisement telling gangs, don't shoot at each other, easy solution. And one more from 312, another very clueless and naive statement. Not drinking is not so simple. If it was, there wouldn't be AA. I have 11 years been sober, and it's not so simple. It's a struggle. It's 157 on WGN. In the next hour, our Bright Side segment. You'll call in, tell us some good news in your world. Your last chance to comment, at least for the time being, on the Bruce Rauner ad. Turn on a TV right now, and there will be a commercial from other governors in other states around us saying how bad Mike Madigan is and how much better their states are than ours.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
You know I do.
Here's John Williams.
They don't always work out, but I do thank them. It's 209. This is John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Lord.
Lord have mercy.
It's cold out there. Actually, we'll wish for days like this when it gets really cold, but this is, I think, the first blush a lot of us have had. Oh, yeah. So that's what happens in the winter. Woke up this morning and had a text from my friend Jordana Green, who does a talk show at WCCO Radio in Minneapolis, where I used to do a show with her. And she said, what's the matter with you people? And then she included an attachment to an article about the bump stock legislation, which failed in Springfield. I don't know if they've tried this in other states, but you'd think after Las Vegas, it would be very easy to pass a law that says you cannot sell or own a device that converts a gun into a machine gun. That's a bump stock. So a Democratic lawmaker in Illinois said, okay, let's do that, and it failed. Not only did Republicans vote against it, downstate Democrats did as well. Tinas Fondelis, she of the Men Watching Construction Sites fame and the political reporter for the Sun-Times, wrote today, downstate Democrats joined with Republicans Thursday to thwart a ban on devices that make semi-automatic rifles shoot about as fast as a fully automatic weapon. They argued the bill would have outlawed too many types of weapons. Okay, I'm sorry. This, to me, boy, when I get to be king, this will happen. This cannot be that complicated. Chris Welch is a Democrat from the 7th district in Hillside, and he joins us now on WGN Radio. Hi, Chris. It's John. You're on the air. How are you?
Hey, John. I'm good. Happy to be on your show.
Yeah, I'm glad that you were able to join us. What happened here?
You know, I think the NRA happened here. I think they, got to quite a few of our legislators and threw their weight around. It's a very powerful organization, and in Illinois, they still have a very strong voice, unfortunately. And, you know, I just think that, you know, the folks that believe in reasonable gun control need to speak up, stand up, speak up, and be heard. Because what you just said before bringing me on the air makes total sense. These are devices that can turn regular semi assault weapons into massive destructive assault rifles. They can go from one click to massive rapid fire in a hurry, and it's exactly what happened in Vegas. And the NRA came out right after that saying these devices are needed, and I agree with them. So why their position has changed since then, I don't understand.
Was it a badly worded bill? That is, while we wanted to at least address bump stocks, maybe we have a bill that says you can't adjust the trigger, you can't adjust the tension or the spring. If you make any modifications to the way it fires, now you're breaking the law, and maybe that's too broad a definition.
Well, you know, I don't believe the bill that we voted upon yesterday was badly worded. Now, that's why I supported it, and it only got 48 votes. We needed 71. So in this process, that means we lost the battle yesterday. But you know, let's get back to the table. The NRA agrees that these types of devices aren't needed. If you didn't like this wording, what wording do you like? When we go back in 2 weeks, I think we should lead the way and show folks that this is not a device that we want to be sold here in the state of Illinois.
So is there going to be a rewrite of this or another version of this? What's going to happen?
Well, the lead sponsor on the bill is my friend and colleague out of Des Plaines, Representative Marty Moylan. I've spoken with him. I know that there's several conversations being had. You know, we have our bill that was voted out yesterday. The NRA has a bill that Representative Barbara Wheeler is sponsoring.
Yeah, that would ban just bump stocks alone, just bump stocks.
And you know, we don't believe that goes far enough, because we know that this guy in Vegas also had prepackaged explosives, and he was ready to really set the place ablaze. That stuff is easily accessible, and just like bump stocks, why should prepackaged explosives, John, be easily available to someone who wants
to? So you wouldn't vote for Barbara Wheeler's bill? You wouldn't vote for it?
I don't think it goes far enough, but if that was put on the board, I would vote to ban bump stocks.
I mean, let's start there. I mean, to be honest with you, you see what's about to happen is you feel that their bill isn't expansive enough. They feel that yours is too restrictive, and so nothing happens when everybody agrees at least bump stocks should be made illegal.
Well, and don't get me wrong, John. I definitely agree that that's a starting point. You know, I certainly believe that we need to put that on the board and start where we all agree and ban bump stocks. You know, my position between now and getting back to the next veto session is let's start where we agree, and let's ban bump stocks. You know, and I'm continuing to put my voice into that conversation.
I wonder what it's like when you guys get together and gals on something like this. It wasn't just Republicans and Democrats. It was, I wonder what the division is. Is it upstate versus downstate or what?
Well, you know, since I've been in the General Assembly since January of 2013, I have noticed a geographical difference when it comes to guns.
Oh, yeah.
Republicans and downstate Democrats, this is one of those areas where they seem to agree. They like their guns. They like to hunt. They like to apparently use bump stock devices when they're hunting. And
seriously? No, really. Do you know that? I mean, do people say that they like to have machine gun action when they go hunting?
That was the argument made on the floor.
Well, I feel bad for that. Listen, you know, there's quotas of deer and elk and muskrats that get to be harvested each year, so I'm not against hunting per se. But that's not hunting. That's ridiculous.
Well, I agree. And let me tell you something. Stephen Paddock had a reservation in Chicago. He wanted to come here and create massive destruction. And had he unleashed onto Grant Park, what he did in Vegas, I think the casualties would have been far greater. And we don't want to have the ease of these devices available in Illinois. And I just believe that a statewide ban on these things should be in place here in Illinois. I agree with the person who called you from Minnesota. Massachusetts has already led the way and put a bill on the desk of the governor. California has banned these things long ago. A place like Illinois that has a massive population center like Chicago should ban these
yeah,
devices.
No kidding.
As well.
Well, and so then say, okay, if we make bump stocks illegal, but then they're able to rig the guns with some other things. I don't know what I'm talking about here, but I mean, I hope that it's effective. If we ban bump stocks, I hope that then that takes away the opportunity, at least legally, I'll start there, for somebody to turn a gun into a machine gun. I hope it would have some effect.
I do too, and I think the real solution, I mean, I think, you know, I come from the belief that you can only control the things that are within your domain, and that's why I'm in the legislature in Illinois, and I believe use our voice there and try to make a difference. But I really think we need some action in Washington. But bump stocks should be banned nationwide, because we know that a lot of the guns in Illinois are coming from Indiana and Wisconsin. That's our real problem. And we can ban these things here in Illinois. We're going to keep fighting to ban these things here in Illinois. But when the vice president's state is letting people get ease of access to these weapons, you know, it doesn't matter. And so I do think that we need a multiple approach to this, and get back to veto session, ban these things, but also we got to keep the fight going on in Washington.
I hope so. Thanks for your time, Chris. Well, it's good luck to you, Representative from the 7th District in Hillside. We'll be in touch on this, all right?
Hey, John, thanks for having me on.
Steve, were you going to ask me to play this song?
No, that's the last thing I would ask you.
This is the Shags and their monster hit we love to play every Halloween. The name of the song is It's Halloween. This one goes out to a little newsman in Chicago named Steve Bertrand.
It's Halloween, it's Halloween, it's time for scares, it's time for squeeze.
Honestly.
It's Halloween.
I'm sorry, you were saying what?
I joke with you, and I'm on your team. I don't get this at all.
Why, even Dracula will be there. It's time for games, it's time for fun, not for just fun.
I don't get it either.
Makes me a little mad at you.
Why don't you like the song?
What? I don't get how you played that song for 20 years.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, there were people who listened to music that had singers that sounded just like that, and it made me, it sounded like nails on a chalkboard.
Frank Zappa credited it as something that inspired him. The Rolling Stone wrote about the Shags.
That's great.
All-girl band from Indiana. You know, I think I love this story is because when I do hear that song, when I hear music from the Shags, I think of them. I don't just think of the music. I think of the story of the Shags, and that's what's really intriguing.
I love this is when he starts to tell the story of the Shags.
So it goes like this. The Shags in the 1960s were an all-girl family band in Indiana, and they had, just like Joe Jackson or some of those guys, a sort of overbearing dad who said, you are going to make music. In fact, he had a vision. I believe it was his mother who had a vision, and it said that I will one day have a son, and he will have a band, and they will be girls, and they will be famous. And so, to sort of fulfill that prophecy, he told the girls who had marginal musical talent to start to learn instruments. And then they started to appear at local talent shows and festivals and county fairs. Probably not even that good. But eventually they honed their skills and released records. They were the Shags. And their It's Halloween is a family holiday favorite all across this great land of ours.
I don't know which parts of that is true, but I know it's not all true.
Oh, every single word of that is.
Not about the favorites across the land.
Okay, maybe that, but I mean, that's subjective. All the other stuff is facts.
Are they still alive?
I think a couple of them are. Mm. They did a reunion tour, not so much.
They did not.
They opened up for the Rolling Stones. There's that.
Really, I think I get a little angry at you when you play that.
Why? Just, of all the things I do to make people angry.
That makes it just, I can't stand it so much.
Well, I always cut it off pretty quickly.
No, not quick enough, ever.
I usually get to the saxophone solo. Elif, crank it up.
So, no. That bright side's coming up, for God's sakes.
All right. About the bump stock legislation that we were just speaking with the downstate. No. Hillside. The Hillside Strangler, legislator Chris Welch. These texts have poured in. John, how can we find out how our legislator voted? How can we contact them? Well, just Google your legislator and you'll be able to find out. I'm sorry, I don't have a scorecard for you on that one. John, if you know anything about guns, shooting, and hunting, this is a stupid law to pass. Yippee, it didn't pass. And then a hand-clapping emoticon, a hand-clapping emoticon, a hand-clapping emoticon. John, if the bill only included bump stocks, it would have passed, but it included too much. Clearly it did. Clearly it did. From the 847 area code, John, if it was solely about bump stocks, they would have voted 100% against it, but they tried to piggyback other restrictive legislation. That's why it failed. From 309, so this is Central Illinois, nobody uses automatic weapons for hunting. Yeah, he said that that's what he heard. That hunters like to put, and I don't think that's it. I don't know who wants to use bump stocks, but I suppose if you went to a firing range, it would be fun to fire a machine gun or something that's been modified to fire like a machine gun. I'm going to guess that's it. I don't know of a hunter who uses an automatic weapon or, you know, a weapon to fire automatically for hunting. The next text, no sane hunter would ever want to hunt with a bump stock, John. Come on. Well, you're not getting any argument from me on that. Speaking of guns, when I got that text message from my friend this morning in Minnesota who said, what's the matter with you people down there? And by the way, the numbers of hunters in Minnesota is off the charts. Doggone it, I wish I had it off the top of my head. But when the hunting season opens in Minnesota, and it's probably like this in Michigan and Wisconsin too, it's like one in six people put on a vest, grab a gun, and they head for the woods. It's just amazing how many people hunt in Minnesota. Even there, I get this text this morning that goes, what's the matter with you guys? You can't get bump stocks, you know, bumped off? I mean, it's just amazing. So I texted my friend back, and I said, yeah, I'm really mad at Thomas Jefferson for this. And she said, why? And I said, well, because while he didn't write the Constitution, he was one of the founding fathers. Could they not have weighed in a little bit? When you talk about the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, not one has failed us more than the Second Amendment, because to this day we do not know what they mean. What's a well-regulated militia? What's the real intent of it? And did they have any foresight? I mean, I know they couldn't have anticipated the internet, but could they not have imagined a day where too many guns in too many people's hands might be problematic? This comes up sometimes when we have Thomas Jefferson on stage. And it's very interesting to see him react to that. And you get angry all over again when he does. To say nothing about his attitude about women voting. So here's what we do. Thomas Jefferson comes on stage. I talk to him for 45 minutes, and then you get a chance to ask questions, too. These are totally unrehearsed, spontaneous conversations, and it is the real deal. A lot of people get dragged to these shows, and they leave advocates. Then they drag their friends to the shows. You will laugh and you will learn. It is our conversation with Thomas Jefferson. It's going to be December 2nd. If you don't have your tickets yet, you can get them now. There aren't that many left, but you'll still get a good enough view. It's going to be at the Elgin Community College. And I believe the theater is called the Blizzard Theater there. So please go to WGNradio.com/events. You know, the reason I want you to do it is because I've just become such an advocate for spreading a little American history as a first-person stage show. This was never my intent, but I see people so enriched. That's a good way to put it, enriched by these shows. They can't believe how quickly an hour and a half, 2 hours goes. They can't believe how much they've learned and how much suddenly they've cared about what life was like then or who these people were, particularly Thomas Jefferson. Now, we do a show with Meriwether Lewis of the Lewis and Clark Expedition on stage two. All of the details at WGNradio.com/events. I was sharing with you, Steve, and everyone else, my love of the Shags. I have some other songs they sing I can feature for you if you'd like.
Can you wait for about 15 minutes?
The Shags are that girl group that I like to play at Halloween time because they did that song, It's Halloween. I love the song. I love the story. I have hope for them that they would have a better life. Ken wanted to call in. Look, Steve, a call has poured in. Ken, you're on WGN. Hi.
John, I'm going to start off the bright side early.
Yeah.
I heard the Shags on your station. That's my bright side.
That's what I'm talking about.
And I'm Steve there. Can I talk to Steve? Steve, put Steve on.
Steve is left.
No, I hear you, Steve. Listen, I have great respect for you because you put John in his place. But you are dead wrong. You know, if this song was in any other country, Russia, North Korea, it would be banned.
Yeah.
You wouldn't hear this song.
No, this is what makes America great.
You took it right out of my mouth. This is what makes America great. Stupid songs like the Shags can get on a radio and be heard 20 years later.
Yep.
Steve, are you dead? I don't hear you talking, Steve.
No, I'm just trying to gather myself.
Steve, come on. You always have some opinion.
Oh, thank you for the call. So there's all of the calls that have come in about the Shags are positive.
It's Halloween. It's Halloween. It's Halloween. It's Halloween.
Steve, that story you did about the women that were in the boat for 5 months stranded reminded me of the Laura Hillenbrand story about Louis Zamperini, who was shot down in the Pacific, the famous Olympian. We all know the story.
Mm-hmm.
And he was out to sea, and the shark jumped over his raft. Do you remember that part of the story?
I didn't read it.
He's in, oh, my God, you should read it. It's better than the movie. Yeah. And he's floating out there, and he's, you know, got a can opener and some old pork and beans, and he's catching fish and just trying to survive by his wits. And the sharks are circling around his raft, and a shark knows that Louis is in there and thinks, I think I'll eat Italian. And so the shark goes after him, jumps into the air, and sails right over his little life dinghy raft out there in the middle Pacific. Ain't nobody knows out there. And then finally, of course, when he gets rescued, they're going to save me. Damn, it turns out to be the Japanese, and you'd wish you were in the raft with the sharks. But it's an amazing story. And I was trying to think of the title of the book. What are you telling me the name of the book is, Steve?
Unbroken.
It's not Unbroken. It's something else. It's a better title than that. Elif, did you look it up?
Beep, beep. Unbroken, a World War II story of survival, resilience, and redemption. Book by Laura Hillenbrand, 2010.
It's Halloween, it's Halloween.
I never did like the title of that book. I think Unbroken is a description of him, but I just never felt like that had enough sizzle. Speaking of sizzle, Patty Vasquez joins us on WGN during the daylight hours on my little show here. Hi, Patty.
Hi. Well, you know, I'm kind of like a little alarm goes off when people are talking state politics, and I have to go running to a phone, and I want to help.
Somebody a minute ago when we were talking with that state legislator about the bump stock legislation fail said, well, how do I find out how my legislator voted? What do you know?
Okay, so you can, and there's a lot of resources. First of all, I think one of the best things to do is know who your legislator is. I know that sounds common sense. So find that out by going to openstates.org. You'll type in your address, and you'll find out who your local, your state, your federal, all your representatives at different states.
Openstate.org?
Openstates.org.
Got it.
Okay. So from that, once you find out who you're, and this is in the House of Representatives this week in Springfield, so you find that legislator, you can go to ilga.gov. And before you do that, follow them on Facebook, follow them on Twitter, because you'll be able to see where they were leaning, and you can actually send them messages, engage in conversation.
That is an interesting idea. I follow a zillion people. I don't follow anybody who I should, because those are the people that vote on my behalf. I don't follow my state representative, my city council member. I should.
Oh, and they're my representative posts Facebook Live videos. When they're done, Representative Martwick will go to the balcony, and he will do a Facebook Live video.
Really?
People can ask questions.
What a good idea.
Yes, and he will tell you how he voted on things. Representative Kifflett, who's out in the suburbs in Aurora, also does Facebook Live. She takes screenshots of how people voted, so you can actually see the photo. And you might be able to go through on her, even if you're not one of her constituents, you can go through her feed, and there will be screenshots. Representative Ann Williams, Representative Sarah Feigenholz, Representative Anderson. These are people on both sides of the aisle who are available on social media. Representative Cabello, who voted against the bill that you're talking about, the bump stock bill, and he rose to speak. And the reason I know this is I was watching it live. Everyone can watch these debates live on ilga.gov. And both when the chamber is in session, you just click on the on video or audio, and you can watch the whole thing happen in real time.
That's really, really helpful. I'm glad you do what you do for us, and I'm glad you've called in here. Are you on tonight, by the way, Patty?
I am on tonight. I will be talking some of this stuff, too. But I so want people, it's always when it's the big legislation or things that catch our attention that people want to know, whether it's the soda tax or the gun laws. But if you know all the way, if you're following them, you feel more informed, you feel more empowered, and that's the most important thing.
Hey,
and also, I'm sorry, I have so many things. Go ahead.
No, what do you got there, Patty? You were about to load up another thought. What was that?
Just a Ballotpedia, and that's for everybody, too. If you're curious about how much your legislator makes or how much they got in contributions or how their voting history is in general, to learn more about them is an excellent resource.
Aboutpedia.
Ballotpedia.
Ballotpedia, as in wiki only,
yes,
ballot. Hey, give me 30 seconds on, I heard your promo and I didn't catch the interview you did with the guy who was the former CIA agent embedded in the Middle East and has a book out. You know the one I'm talking about?
Yes, American Radical. He's the author's pseudonym, because he is still active, it's by Tamer El-Nouri, and he was born in Egypt, was in law enforcement here in the United States. His family moved here when he was very little and was always passionate about criminal justice, and was in law enforcement when 9/11 happened, and eventually became a recruit for the FBI and works undercover around the world, making sure that...
I saw him on 60 Minutes, and I thought, well, this is the damned strangest story I've ever seen. How did the interview go?
It was wonderful. He was really... And his thing, too, is like me, is the more you know, be informed. This is on all of us to pay attention. If you see something, say something. I know it sounds pokey, but... And he said education and tolerance are the two things that we need to be better about.
They're giving me the rap. I got to do the bright side. You want to do a bright side before I go to break and then come back with the bright side? Tell us something that's making Patty Vasquez smile today.
I am very happy to be hosting a gala tonight for ChildServe, an organization that helps at-risk children lead happier and healthier lives. So that's going to be a very exciting event, and so proud to be participating.
I'll talk to you again. Thanks, Patty.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, appreciate you calling in. Okay, let me take a quick break. It's just time to call or text 312-981-7200. It's The Bright Side. We start the weekend on Fridays with you telling us some good news in your world, big or small. My bright side is candy corns. Brenda is keeping a little dish of candy corns on the kitchen counter for me, and I just love them when I get home. It's time for The Bright Side.
Some things in life are bad.
Call me, text me.
They can really make you mad.
Okay, you ready?
Other things just make you swear and curse.
312.
When you're chewing on life's gristle.
981.
Grumble. Give a whistle.
7200.
And this'll help things turn out for the best.
Everybody sing.
Hey.
Always.
Always look on the bright side.
We do this on Fridays to start your weekend. Now, Steve Bertrand's still in the news seat. Hey, Steve, what's going on?
Well, last weekend I went to Miami of Ohio for my son's frat father-son weekend.
Yeah.
Tomorrow I'm going back because he's got an improv show and I can't wait to see it.
Oh, wow. Have you seen his improv before?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Pretty good, huh?
Yeah, he's on the troupe there. It's very good.
Funnier than his dad, that sort of thing?
Much funnier than his dad.
Burst your lips and whistle. That's the thing. Hey. Always look on the bright side.
All right, let's start with some phone calls. Let's go with Joanne. You're on WGN. Joanne, why are you smiling today?
Well, I'm smiling, John, because I like listening to you every day, first of all.
Thank you.
Secondly, 3 weeks ago, my son got married, but for the last 4 or 5 months, they've been rehabbing the interior of a house he and his wife have purchased, and we're starting to move furniture in today.
So the furniture goes in and they go out, and it sounds like that's good news for everybody. Hey, Joanne, thanks for the call. From you to Sue, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Sue?
Hi, John. This is Sue Cox. I'm smiling because Ron and I are leaving for Maui tomorrow when it may snow here.
Hey, I owe Ron a call, by the way. He's got some good guest ideas for me, and I haven't forgot. I just haven't picked up the phone. It's nice to hear your voice, Sue.
I understand. Okay.
Hey,
you too, John.
You guys are going to our Thomas Jefferson show, too, right?
We sure are.
Have a great trip, Sue. This is Dave. You're on WGN. Dave, what's your bright side?
Bright side, my son's home from his second tour. He's going to be getting out in 2 months. He's going to finish his master's. He's been accepted to college out where he's stationed, and he's going to go teach, do something different.
Wow, what a great story. My best to him. Thank you for his service.
You're welcome.
Hey, Kim, this is John. What's your bright side?
Hi, John. My bright side is that we just bought our flight to go on a safari in South Africa.
Wow. Well, you'll have some stories to tell. I want you to call us back when you return.
I will.
Wow. Hey, Lori, it's John. You're on WGN. Why are you smiling this afternoon? Hi, Lori. How are you? Breaker, breaker, Lori. We'll come back to Lori if she's still there. Meantime, let's go to, I think it's Carl. Hey, Carl, this is John. You're on WGN.
Hey, let's go from Lori to Carl, John. Hey, John, I'm not getting married. However, I'm going to a live taping at the WTTW Studios on Halloween night to see Richie Sambora of Bon Jovi and his gal pal, Oriente Panagiris, who's one of the best female guitar players in the world.
You got to call me again. I haven't heard from you in a while, Carl. Thanks for stepping in and saying hi. From you to Steph. Hey, Steph, it's John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hi, John. I am heading towards Sycamore, Illinois to work at the Nut Hut for our pumpkin festival.
Steph, thanks for the call. I believe that's also how we... We should rename WGN Radio's, I don't know, newsroom or station. Your 50,000-watt Nut Hut. Lauren, this is John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hi, I had a big birthday this week, and my son, who lives out of town, came in and surprised me at a party that I had.
Oh, isn't that fun? So there you were having a good time, and then he walks in?
He walked in at our house just before we went over to the restaurant.
How much fun was that?
It was great. He'd been hiding in the attic for 4 hours waiting.
Lauren, happy birthday.
Thank you.
You raised him right. Good boy. Good boy. Brianna, this is John. You're on WGN. Why are you smiling today? Hi, Brianna. Are you there? By the way, she told Elif what her bright side is. She said her bright side is that she's seeing Bob Dylan tonight. Well, that would make me smile, too. Did you see what Bob Dylan's guitar went for? Kim, is that you in the newsroom over there?
It's me.
What did Bob Dylan's guitar go for?
I don't know, but I can look it up.
Elif, look up what Bob Dylan's guitar went for at auction. It was like $1 zillion. It was insane.
I'll give you my bright side while we're looking.
What's your bright side?
My son got into graduate school.
Woohoo! No kidding. Where's he going to go? What's he studying?
Chicago School of Psychology, the L.A. campus, family and marriage counseling.
Wow. Wow. Well, congratulations to him. Good
That's
for
exciting.
You guys. Elif, what did it go for?
$300,000.
Can you imagine that? Hey, Patrick, it's John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
I got 2 more days left of work until I'm off on Monday.
Yeah. And then you're on vacation, are you?
No, just 2 days off.
A couple of days. That's better. 2 days off or better than 2 days on, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Thank you.
I remember you on Michigan Avenue.
Yeah, we're still here.
I used to be a traffic gate down there.
Well, you got to come down and see us sometime, Pat.
I will.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Let's go to Dan. You're on WGN. Dan, what's your bright side? You're on the air.
Hey, John. I just turned 60 a month ago, and I sat down with my financial planner, and he said that I can retire tomorrow if I want. So I'm going to sell a business, and I'm out of here. I'm going to find a beach.
Are you serious? Just like that, you're retiring in a couple of days?
Yeah. Anybody wants to buy an engraving business in Waukegan, let me know.
I'm going to help you, sir. What is the name of your engraving business in Waukegan you're trying to sell?
It's called Kennedy's Creative Awards.
All right. Well, good luck to you. Congratulations. You win. You win, Dan.
All right, have a great weekend.
Remember now, it's not just about having enough money to retire. It's what are you going to do after you do? Yes, friends, you should visit myprivatevista.com. I'm kind of not kidding. What's the matter, Elif? You wanted to do one? Did you not do your bright side? What's your bright side, Elif? You're on.
I am visiting my sister and my brother-in-law in L.A. on Thursday.
Oh, no kidding. Nice.
The first time in California.
Oh, yeah. How long are you going to be out there?
5 days.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. You'll have to call in. Tell us how it's going.
Yeah, I will.
No, don't. Don't. That's work, and
okay.
You're on vacation.
Okay.
Hey, David, you're on. What's your bright side?
John, I had a mice infestation in my house last winter that took about 3 months, exterminators, to finally eradicate. I sold the house this summer. I bought a newer house and had it for 2 months. And today, my wife found a big, fat gray mouse in the window wall of the basement. And while I was gone, and my 16-year-old son, who was headed for a military career, eradicated it with his airsoft rifle. So the final score is man one, mouse zero. Life seems
jolly rotten. Thanks for the call, David. My best to y'all. One more call, then we got to wrap this up. Let's make that Janet. Hey, Janet, you're on WGN. What's your bright side, Janet? You're on the air.
Hi, John. This weekend, I'm marching with the University of Illinois Alumni Band, and my son is a senior, Sam, and he's in the head of the student section, the black eye, the card section. So we'll be on the field together.
How much fun. How much fun. Have a great weekend.
Thanks. Go Illini.
Yeah, I was going to say, you guys got your sort of work cut out for you this weekend, don't you?
I know. Go Illini.
You must always fight. I'm not mistaken, they're playing Wisconsin. And if I'm not mistaken, Wisconsin's really good. It's coming up on 257, our Bright Side segment. We do this on Fridays. It's sponsored by Home Care Assistance of Greater Chicago. Thank you to them for that. Ro and Anna get ready to entertain you in a minute. Okay, so the kids are out at the, I was going to say United Center because I was thinking of Blackhawks hockey coming up. But in fact, they are out at the Hofbrau House and they're getting ready for a hometown tour, a Hometown Voices tour stop. So Ro, Khan, Anna DeVlantis, and the gang, normally they stroll into the studio right about now, and we chit-chat a little bit about their show, but they will tell you about all of that right after the news.